legend becomes fact. Print the legend.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Trusting in the sanity and restraint of the United States is not a strategy, and it is not an option.
We don't need no thought control.
What's a conspiracy notion out there? How much influence do you have? Was it you and your fellow neoconservatives that created the momentum towards overthrowing Saddam Hussein?
Nobody does a thing in this town without our approval.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, a secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets.
Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom, along with my co-host, Sherman Skolnick, the great judge buster and treason buster. Sherman's on assignment. Right now joining me is Captain Eric May of Ghost Troop. Captain, welcome back to Cloak and Dagger.
Lenny, it's great to be in touch with you. It's been a couple days since we've talked, but they've been a busy couple of 3 days, haven't they?
It sure has. Things are really, fiery, a lot going on. Open up your briefing tonight and let's talk
well,
about...
Well, I'll tell you what, going back to the fiery motif, you know that we've had the, in fact, I'm quoting the British journalist sources now by saying there has been the largest petrochemical explosion in Europe since the Second World War.
Amazing.
That was Sunday, wasn't it? Sunday morning, being the 11th.
Yeah.
You notice that lately, every weekend it seems, there's some kind of a new calamity or disaster to keep anybody from talking about deconstructing the war cabal.
Yeah.
And that's always suggestive. But the explosion in England is particularly noteworthy. Those who have listened to me for a while, Lenny, on your show, know that I'm in Houston. And Houston is the imperial city of the Bush dynasty.
Ah.
These people are from Connecticut and parts northeast. They're Yaleys and Blue Bloods, but they grafted themselves like a parasite onto the state of Texas after the first President Bush's administration ended. He came to Houston, and of course, boy George Bush was promoted out of his level of competence to be the governor of this state. This is a petro state, Lenny, and these are petro princes, George Bush and his daddy.
Yep.
And, British Petroleum, of course, is a major part of the world petroleum picture, and we of Ghost Troop find it most interesting that British Petroleum facilities continue to be involved in these unexplained, perhaps not to be explained, blowups. British Petroleum, you may know, was one of the three oil companies that owned part of the stock at this large petro depot in England.
Yeah, yeah.
The other, incidentally, was Texaco. And I don't have to argue real hard about what state they're headquartered in. So your listeners may, in fact, if they don't know, I encourage them to see. You've been good about leaving our July 28, 2005 interviews about the British Petroleum explosion in Texas City, Texas, on your front page. And those interviews contain a bit of analysis of what kind of thing this war cabal, the Bush boys, are into involving the British Petroleum folks. Shortly put, I don't think any of these explosions are accidental. I don't think any of them are accidental at all.
No.
But
no.
What I like to do with you, Lenny, is run down the numbers. You know how in Ghost Troop we keep, true to our military intelligence background, many of us do a little bit of crypto analysis. when it comes to working with the media-generated numbers related to these incidents.
Yeah.
You want to have the ones from England?
Absolutely.
Okay. The first is the telltale, Lenny, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit because you're getting pretty good at following my analysis now. There are always the same number of initial explosions or attacks, and you've got that one. It's three.
Yeah.
They always do three. You know, just that's the constant ever since 9/11.
Yeah.
Always three. There were three explosions to begin this England thing. Now, I'm working off information I gleaned from open media within the first 12 hours. The next thing is the body counts. They always work body counts because body counts are not reporting numbers. Body counts are inserted numbers.
Yeah.
These are code numbers that are put into the equation because they're a standard part of every news story. The body count was zero because no people were killed, so you got to go with wounded instead. First wounded number, 39. Now, 39, you know, first off, it's at 39 is the cult number for all things involving the Israelis. 3 plus 9 is their supreme number. In the same way that the Freemasons, the Illuminatus, and the Skull and Bones boys are in love with the 33, that's their supreme number.
Exactly.
With the Kabbalist side of things, the Jewish side of it, you get 39. I don't know why that's there, but it's there. And then the next number, that number of 39, the initial wounded list, was revised upwards to 43, and there it stands. Now, 43 is most interesting because 43 gives you 4 plus 3, the 7 motif. And that takes us right back to the summer, Lee, where you and I picked up this whole BP thing.
Right.
Because 7-7 was London.
Yeah.
And then 7-2-1 was London 2. Remember? London, three bombs.
Yep.
Three blasts. And then London 2 on 7-2-1, it was just three smoke grenades. They ran a classified exercise and did the whole thing over again.
And since then, of course, it's come out that the bombers were all connected, of course, with the military, British military intelligence.
Oh, sure, sure. You know, having to... The great impediment to the progress of the anti-war movement is that we spend so much time trying to cross the T's and dot the I's. What's going on here is pretty apparent on an intelligence basis just by a little bit of inferential reasoning. The particulars of how everybody's connected in this play, it could take years for all that to come out. So I work by the broad brush things and leave it to more astute or more patient analysts to fill in the details. So that's one of them.
Exactly.
These British Petroleum things have been going on forever, Lenny. In fact, our initial work in what we call the embedded code, to take a moment back, embedded code means the code that the media has embedded into the main feed. That embedded code is what they promised they were going to do when they said they were going to be embedded media. For the purposes of this war, they were announced to be embedded media, and like all the little codes and all the little jokes, that was intended to be a signal for those who understood and intended to be an in-your-face kind of insult to those who couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
That single principle that they are smarter than we are, is, you know, that's half the explanation of why there even is a code. They have to have a secret way of communicating information at many different levels that's accessible to everyone and understood by few.
Well, they use,
you know,
they use colors a lot, the true colors. If you watch Clinton or Bush, watch the color of the tie they're wearing because they signal their teams via the different color ties, true colors.
These are all standard devices that were used. You know, I used to get paid good money to read Krasnaya Zvezda and Pravda and Tass to pick this kind of stuff out. There's nothing about this that's phenomenal or hard to understand once you understand that every country does this in time of war. It's just that in this case, we have two wars.
Yeah.
An external illegal aggressive war against the Middle East and an internal illegal aggressive war against our own people, that being carried out by the Bush boys and the war cabal. But what we're getting into when we get into these numbers is the very essence of what we call a cabal. You know, that word has crept into the political discussion in the United States, but that word is very specific. It comes from the very essence of the Hebrew Kabbalah, the secret cult of purposes that would be announced and conducted by script and coding.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea of the Kabbalah, and the Kabbalah is just the Jewish version of what the satanic wannabe so-called Christians like Bush called the Freemasonic lore. But the Kabbalah is what gives us the name Cabal. And that's why you have, getting back to this London thing, or rather this England thing, the UK BP explosion, that's why you have little subtle things, like MSNBC did a broadcast. They did their evening broadcast from London. Their one-time live broadcast when it was all dark in London. And do you know what time they delivered it on Sunday evening?
No.
7:11 p.m. London time.
Oh, well,
and they made sure. Of all the times you could have picked.
Yeah.
They had to make sure that it was 7:11.
Well, of course.
And of course.
You know, just let me mention that since you're talking about the word cabal, the place where that first surfaced in the United States literature, especially about the assassination literature, was, of course, the Torbett document, which had the title Nomenclature of an Assassination Cabal. I don't know if you remember the Torbett document when it came out in the late 70s.
I don't.
It was a document that detailed the men behind the Kennedy assassination, and we knew it was written by one of the lawyers connected with the assassination who worked at a very high level, and he, under a pen name, William Torbett, wrote the real story about from Clay Shaw down and a little bit of from Clay Shaw up towards British intelligence. He called it a nomenclature of an assassination cabal. So go ahead. When you say the word cabal, I think of the Torbett document.
Right. Well, these devices that were used by the secret societies among the Jewish people, the Kabbalah, that were picked up and emulated by people like the Freemasons or whatnot. And candidly, I don't know who invented them first. I'm supposing it was Kabbalah first, because I'm supposing Kabbalah is older, but I'm not sure of that. But these are all standard, you could say, gang devices. They're simply street gang devices elevated to the level of mystery societies and whatnot. But every time there are conspiratorial designs, these things are a very tempting inclusion into conspiratorial designs. You could say that secret societies were made for conspiracies and nothing else.
Well,
that's the whole purpose
conspiracies,
for secret societies.
Conspiracies are enhanced culturally when you have a tribal society. And to the extent that a society becomes detribalized, it loses its ability to really maintain that communications necessary in order to create the cabal. So it's natural if you study media science and look at the communications within the tribes versus non-tribal groups, you realize that the tribal groups have an advantage in that they have this very guttural sort of communications. Of course, in Russia, the tribal communication was called samizdat. Do you remember? You must have studied samizdat as a Russian, trained in Russian studies. You're familiar with that.
Oh yeah, self-published material.
But samizdat was more than that, in that there was a network, an underground communications network between the poets and the artists in Russia and the intellectuals, and they were able to pass information around to their various groups within the underground through samizdat. So it was not only it was a network. It wasn't just a typewriter. It was a whole network of it was their own internet, quite frankly.
The internet has become as the samizdat. Samizdat literally means samizdatova. It means self-published. But you're right.
That's right, and that's what the internet is. It's all people self-publishing.
Right. It extended to much more than, as you say, the mimeograph machine or the typewriter. It became a whole network.
Yeah, and
in fact,
you could even call the internet a samizdat without walls.
Oh, yeah, it should. You know, but in fact, last time we talked, I think we were discussing how the Internet is the new people's network. And by the way,
And it's the new government.
Exactly.
Because every
it's
new...
It's the great focus of world attention.
Yeah, and
you might say it's the counterattack of all the lawful forces of humanitarianism today in the face of globalism. You could almost say it's the internet versus the globalists.
Absolutely. Actually, what happens is it is a container that globalism has to globalism can't go around the internet. The internet has gone around and globalism, and that's what's giving it. That's what's giving it its attention. But the thing that's interesting is the internet as a new government of the people is more powerful than anything else. The internet is the new world government, and all these guys on TV realize it and don't want to tell everybody else, and so they're scrambling because they're in trouble.
Oh, the most pathetic thing I see on TV, Lenny, and everything I see on TV is pathetic. I only watch it to analyze it as an intel professional.
Yeah, well, you don't watch TV, you just study it. I don't watch it,
I screen TV. The most pathetic thing I see is when someone like CNN tries to bring on their quote-unquote internet reporter, which means someone who looks 20-something who goes to the sites that only someone 90-something would go to. In other words, they try to describe the internet as being a format that's very much like CNN or MSNBC, which of course is altogether false. But it expresses the whole kernel of the matter, which is that when the TV stations and the radio stations and the magazines go to the point that they start formatting themselves to look like the internet and start doing articles about the internet, then guess what the dominant medium is, my friend? The internet.
Yeah.
And it sucks to be them, and it serves them right.
They abuse the medium of television tremendously.
Remember, the first few was made by Hitler.
Tremendously abused.
Right?
Exactly. Well,
I mean, what was it, the Olympics of 36? What was the first? It was a Hitler speech, the first used to TV. It's the greatest mass propaganda medium of all time. Of that, there can be no doubt.
And even to go beyond that, it's important to recognize that it's a drug, and it is a very heavily induced drug, and it's a drug defect, and it should be treated as a dangerous drug.
And certainly, the psychological restructuring.
Yeah.
Looking at this,
the whole upsetting of the harmony of the senses and the hierarchy of the senses, which television had the ability to do, was totally revolutionary and destructive in America.
Right.
Used as a propaganda machine.
I think someone was calling it in the 50s a vast wasteland, and that was in its good days. Now it's become an acid bath. You know, TV strip finds the soul, man. That's what it's there for, or that's what it's become there for.
Well, the best way television should be used is it should be all licenses granted by the FCC for television shows that are broadcast propaganda. Put it this way: all ones that are broadcast should not be allowed to carry the audio carrier along with the video signal. So if you want to be in the TV business, we'll give you a license to carry a video channel, but you're not granted a license to have a carrier audio with it. You can show your pictures, but there's no audio allowed.
That
would be one of the most important advances, using the power of the FCC to remove the audio carrier with television. I'll give them the video and allow them to fill in the difference themselves, and that will wake people up because they no longer will be able to watch their shows. They'd have to start studying television.
True enough.
Anyway, go ahead, Captain May.
What's that?
Go ahead. Your floor.
Well, to get back to for just a moment, since we are on that trail, you know, the chutzpah of this whole war cabal, you realize the FCC is the watchdog of American broadcast. That's what's there to protect us citizens.
Yeah, that's Powell's son.
Michael Powell. Right?
Okay, now you're starting. And Powell himself is a major traitor, goes to the UN, says, look, everything I'm about to tell you is backed up by the record, forensic records, and it turns out...
Are you talking about the claim of WND?
Yeah, Powell is the biggest liar.
It was a 1-2 punch. After Daddy went to the UN and told his lies for, you know, Bush's boss, Michael Powell came out and tried to give away the bandwidth to the major five corporations. That was a direct payoff for covering up Baghdad for the government, by the way. You remember the major media covered up the April 5th through 8th Battle of Baghdad with Private Jessica. It wasn't 1 month later, Lenny, that the FCC, spring of 2003, tried to give away what was left of the bandwidth to the major corporations.
Yeah.
This has been a complete, it's been nepotism from the inside, it's been kleptocracy. You could teach a pretty fair vocabulary class on the number of abusive forms of government incorporated into this war cabal, couldn't you?
And I think that's what you and I should start to do regularly each night. Let's start it off.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. There's one thing you got to keep in mind that I tell all ghost troops, which is that the same way, the first things first, this is the Fourth Reich built for the Third World War. 9/11 was the Reichstag fire. The Homeland Security Agency is the Gestapo. The Patriot Act is the Enabling Act. And, most important of all, you have to have party discipline, as you said. You have to have a group of people who work together. And the best unit is tribal. So what we have here is not the Nazi Party, which was Hitler's insiders that helped transform the German people into a fascist dictatorship. What we have is the Nosy Party, and as you know, Lenny, we love to do word games and ghost troops. Nosy Party is simply an anagram for N-O-Z-I, anagrams out to Z-I-O-N. The Nosy Party is a Zionist element in the United States, which, after all, runs the media, both coasts, movies, music, news. You know, there are so many different elements. They're the ones who really did the brain work of making this whole apparatus possible. And, of course, they have the brilliant retreat that anybody who suggests that they ever had anything to do with anything that looks like the Third Reich must obviously be a deranged person because they suffered so much from the Reich. It's the perfect chutzpah excuse.
Yep.
They never expected they'd be accused of this because they spent the last 60 years talking about how much they suffered under this. So what could be further from belief than that the people who suffered this particular form of government would construct it to abuse the country that took them in so that they could wield that country as a weapon against the part of the world that they want to dominate. There's the cornerstone, if you will, of the ghost troop Weltanschauung. And things like this coding analysis that we do on the British Petroleum folks and the embedded code in the media, this is just icing on the cake. But to get back to that icing, Lenny, remember, the BP explosion that just happened in the UK, first off, was ensured to remind everybody of World Wars because the UK media went crazy saying it was the biggest blast since World War II. Then they played the number games with the 3-9 equaling 12, which, by the way, is just like the Amman Jordan blast of 119, which was 911 backwards. That blast killed 57. I kept wondering where that number was going to go. That number stayed at 57, and 5 plus 7 is 12. That's the Mossad mark, man. That's their Kabbalah signature. So this London thing has gone down, and it brings us, not London, the UK BP incident has gone down, and it makes me more and more sure that British Petroleum is the designated petroleum operations unit. That they're the ones who are going to do the mischief. And Lenny, you and I know that in July 28, 2005, this year, with the two interviews we did being on your homepage right now, British Petroleum, Texas City, Texas, was set up to become the 9-1-1-2-B event, the second event that it seems like everybody doing any kind of strategic analysis is talking about.
And let's not forget, as Dreyfus, in his book, A Hostage to Khomeini, discovered and wrote about, British Petroleum was involved in the taking out of the Shah and the putting in of Khomeini. And, of course, they ran the hostage incident. Don't forget. They ran the hostage incident right out of down the street from the White House.
Well, British Petroleum
is a sub-government. It's a major government.
Well, it's an Anglo/globalist. It's a Halliburton. It's one of those companies
absolutely
that has played ball with the Bush people.
Yeah.
And as you and I have discussed in the past, British Petroleum, Texas City, Texas, continues to blow up.
It's just like,
and it blows up unaccountably.
It's just like what we had here in Canada. It was called Petrocan. Who owned it?
Who was it?
Who owned it? BP. You know, BP.
Well, it was BP, or let's put it this way. What it turned out to be BP.
It's a crown corporation. We call them crown corporations. That's
right.
What they're called here in Canada. It's a crown corporation. Well, that's what BP is. It's a crown corporation. And Permindex, is just a subsidiary of subsidiaries of crown corporations. And it's called Imperial Commerce. Simple.
We started doing...
If 5 will get you 10, 10 will get you 20. WC. Go ahead, sorry.
As you know, Ghost Troop started out working specifically on military analysis, tactical, a little bit of geostrategy, and a whole lot of body count cover-up. But we stayed pretty much within the competence of military intelligence, as I understood it, having been an officer in that field. But it was with the British Petroleum explosion of 2004, that being March 30th, 330, isn't that cute, 2004, that was when we first began to work with the embedded code. And any of your listeners who are interested in this, I strongly encourage them to look up Ghost Troop Captain May. And in the first couple of pages of any search engine, they're going to see things like my embedded code analysis. And to turn and look at that.
Well,
we
listen,
discovered that... Go ahead.
We're going to sign off soon. We're running skinny on time, Captain. So sum
take
up.
Take a look at that
British
Petroleum use and stuff that we were doing in 2004 and 2000. Google British Petroleum, Texas City. And Ghost Troop, or Captain May, or go to my stuff and look from there, or go to my name up there on your front page, Lenny, and click that on. You'll get our log, our operations log, or better yet, go down the Cloak and Dagger page to the 2-7-2-8-2005 interviews where Lenny and you and I can say authoritatively, we broke up something immense down in Texas City, Texas, something immense that had been set up through British Petroleum, and that was surrounded in coding of the sort that we've been doing just a little bit of tonight with the UK British Petroleum blast. These events in March 2004 and July 2005 were filled with coding to the point that we were able to, in Ghost Troop, we were able to predict the March 30th, 2004 event 2 weeks in advance to within 24 hours and 24 miles. That being a United States-wide prediction, and we were able to predict the 7-2-8-2005 explosion at British Petroleum, Texas City, Texas, to within 24 hours and 24 miles again.
Yep.
The odds to doing that randomly are simply astronomical.
Yep.
There is something there, and I ask all of your listeners to scrutinize it. As long as these rascals, this global war cabal, this 911 cabal, as long as they're locked in to this Illuminatus Cabalis code, that's their Enigma code. Do you remember the Enigma code from World War II, Lenny?
Yeah.
The Germans ran it, and once the Allies figured it out, that was it. Well, we have their code. They're running a code, they're running numerics, and it can be deciphered. I've done a little bit of preliminary work in it. I by no means claim to be a cryptoanalyst. I'm more of a linguist by training. But I can work with it in a crunch, and I invite the scrutiny of your listeners to the Ghost Troop work on the embedded code.
Okay, Captain May, this is Lenny Bloom, cloakanddagger.de. We're here to scrape the bullshit off the truth and talk about the state secrets right under your nose, folks, the ones that the ruling elite hope you don't learn. Captain May, what's going on with this officer's coup?
Well, I'll tell you what. The Prez, as we call him affectionately, the Prez, Boy George, did a speech from Philadelphia yesterday. And, of course, a dictator giving speeches from Philadelphia, the birthplace of the Constitution and the Declaration, is already an obscenity. But, of course, that's what turns this cultish bunch on, the idea that they know what's going on and we don't. But when he was giving his speech, he started out by pointing out how at the beginning of the Republic, things had been very rocky, and there were a lot of problems going on. around the time that the Constitution was solved, or signed rather, one of them being, in fact, that there was talk of an officer's coup at that time in history. And I found it singularly interesting that that should be brought into a speech by a commander-in-chief in front of an American political group.
Yeah, because I'd call that a major brain malfunction.
Well, I think it was a scripted speech, so I think the people who wrote that speech, and as you know, Lenny, and as anyone can find out by reading my Ghost Troop introduction, I interviewed to be Bush's speechwriter back when he was the governor of Texas.
Yeah, there's madness. There's means to his madness.
Well, I think that maybe they're trying to scare people off from doing it. I mean, it's not the kind of thing you just throw in. I've never heard a commander-in-chief mention that kind of thing in my life. But let's talk about what's happening in the macro picture. With this election in Iraq coming up, which is almost certainly destined for the shambles, you know, in one way or another, even if the election goes off, it's going to fall apart. It's a contrived system. But with this election coming up on the 15th, the media has decided, and I think we've talked about it, as of last Sunday, that they would kind of pump Bush back up. That, you know, he's fallen apart down to the mid-30s in a poll rating. So what they did at this speech in Philadelphia was that five questioners were inserted into the group, and after Bush gave his speech, he spontaneously, of course, said, well, I'm here to take questions. So for the first time in God knows how many years, he took, quote, unscripted, quote, spontaneous questions from people who were, of course, thoroughly scripted and arranged. And he got a chance to do things like give body count numbers with some specificity. They were lies, of course, but they were at least specific. In effect, in short, he got to do everything that people say he doesn't do. He even used a $5 word. I forget what it was. Specificity? A cool word. He threw out a couple of specific numbers, and he actually sounded like he'd been staying awake in briefings. So all of that was scripted nonsense that they threw in through five arranged questions at the end of this thing, but the media nationwide in the U.S. carried it as a great moment for President Bush standing on his own in an independent capacity, answering spontaneous questions. Now, you and I have been
I'll tell you this, and that is, I don't think we can forget about the fact that I always bring this up. It's always on my mind, but we seldom really. We talk about it here and there. They can't fool us. They've got I've seen two doppelgangers for this guy. Two doppelgangers. And this is a guy who comes from a doppelganger brigade of people. They did doppelgangers from Oswald. They've been doing doppelganger after doppelganger, and they've got a doppelganger on this guy, and sometimes they use them and sometimes they don't.
And Lenny, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You got me?
You there?
I'm here.
Okay, I'll just pick back up.
Did you lose me?
Yeah, for a moment. When you're on doppelganger, they go from one to another.
Yeah. Bottom line is this, that Clinton had a doppelganger and he was pigeon-toed, and when he went golfing on weekends and they didn't need him, the Secret Service didn't guard him. He just wore a hat and a trench coat.
Well, I'll tell you.
Anyway, the bottom line is, it doesn't really matter. But we all know that the president is just a role player. He's not the president of the United States. And quite frankly, this president has proven that what he should do right off the bat is he should relinquish his role as commander in chief. That he has no right to hold on to. Let him stay for the president, but you need a new commander-in-chief. This guy can't do the job. He's a madman. The commander-in-chief role should be taken away from him right away. Forget the presidency. Let him sit in the White House and pretend to be the president for a minute. The first thing he's got to do is appoint a new commander-in-chief who's got in charge of the army. And this guy hasn't got the right to be in charge of any army. He's a moron.
Well, the great fear of poor commanders-in-chiefs has always been that armies would appoint their own, and that may account for why it was that they had the little remark about coups in there. You know, Lenny, I think it bears repeating here. I keep calling everybody's attention to the front page of the Cloak, front page.
Well, okay, I'll tell you this. If there's a bunch of military officers in the Pentagon, then as a Canadian, I'm going to say one thing. So far, guys, no one's got any bravery in America. I would have thought as a Canadian, with all that you guys were raised at West Point, that you would have stopped a madman long in his tracks, nowhere near getting into the White House. But here
Well, Lenny, I have friends and students of my own who are in West Point, and I've always had a pretty good impression of the institution, although I was a simple enlisted man who afterwards got his commission through ROTC while I was in college on the GI Bill. But while I can't account for what the West Pointers have been doing, you bring up a deeper statement about the nature of American officers. And I want to again call your listeners' attention to the front page of the Cloak's homepage, where on 728, as they scroll down, they'll see two Ghost Troop briefings with you on 728-2005. And Lenny, just to remind you, because you were there, in that first of those two 728-2005 briefings, when the Bush boys had sabotaged the British Petroleum Texas City, Texas refinery for the second time in Ghost Troop operations, I actually called for the arrest of the Bush boys and the institution of a constitutional coup on air internationally at about 6:30 p.m. Houston time. I imagine you remember that.
Yeah, I sure do.
I don't know what the hell is taking people so long to follow my orders. As far as I can see, at this point in American history, it's really whosoever is serving his country who derides lawful authority from the Constitution. And it was for just such a moment as we had on July 28, 2005, that I decided that when I started my mission to find out why they were covering up dead boys and using false propaganda stories like Jessica to hide battles like that of Baghdad, I decided that I was going to wear my military rank and I was going to call myself by my military rank, and I was going to inform the Army at all echelons exactly what I was doing, and I did. And that's the kind of thing that gives you the authority to say something like, there is an attempt to create a false flag attack against Texas City, Texas through the British Petroleum Facility. It has been aborted, and someone should immediately arrest X, Y, and Z. That's what needs to be done at this point. And as far as I'm concerned, I have given lawful orders, and I'm still wondering what's taking people so long to follow them, because I have not rescinded my order. Now, you may know, in fact, I think I told you, that the FBI in Houston very well knows what orders I issued that night, and their take on all this is just good old American First Amendment expression, and they don't want to get into what it was that happened in Texas City on July 28, 2005 that's on your front page now in two interviews. So that's fine. Everybody can pretend like this is First Amendment, but I've never said that it was merely First Amendment. As far as I'm concerned, they're valid military orders. And I wish a more experienced, more prestigious officer would step in and pick up what I started. And I think in the long run, you know, Lenny, we've been doing this for a while. And there are so many things that you and I have been talking about for years that are now creeping into public discourse. I hear mainstream media tramps now talking about how this war is being reputed to be all oil in Israel. But all of us knew it was that when it started who were thinking people who understood geostrategy. I'm hearing people talk about war cabal, and we went 3 years talking about that before anybody repeated it. We're pretty close to having somebody actually mention King George and the idea that the revolutionary document, the Declaration, was written against such a person. All these things are going to be said, and it's like Schopenhauer said, by the time they are said by everyone, everyone would have thought that they always believed them the whole time, which is fine. That's the way things go. Who is to say, Lenny, right now, between you and me, and we're pretty wide-thinking people between the two of us, I would not bet that my order of 728-2005 does not wind up becoming part of history and law.
Yeah, I totally agree. Absolutely. I totally agree.
It was the right order at the right time, and I was out internationally. You know, I'm not an idiot. I wouldn't be calling us for something like that if it weren't an utter imperative done with utter clarity. Lenny, you and I were probably part of one of the very first moments of this war that could honestly be called cyber combat. When we were dealing with things in the crypto-analytic realm that led us to predict that the Bush boys would try to create a nuclear false flag attack.
Exactly.
At Texas City, Texas, British Petroleum, 728-2005.
Right. Yeah.
We were on the internet radio that's at your fingertips, putting that signal out internationally.
Yeah.
You know, at the same time, they were arranging to have demonstration explosions in the sky over Houston, which we caught in the second interview.
Yep.
All this was going down in real time, and we were covering it.
Yep.
And I don't know where it stopped being journalism and where it started becoming military combat.
Exactly.
There were real things blowing up. There was really the prospect that World War III was going to start that night. And you know, because this is on tape, that when you said, "What's next?" I said, "I don't know who's going to be alive tomorrow. We'll see then." That's how really, really real it got. And that's how really, really real it is. So when people hear about things like the UK explosions of BP, none of this is coincidental. It's like the wonderful thing you have up at the top of the cloak page where thinking it's all accidents is for amateurs, folks. It's planned. Well, then, once again, that kind of catches us up on the poor media trying to prop up King George and trying to prop up all his ideas. And you could say it's the best thing that ever happened to people on the Internet, whether they're on the Internet to save the world, as we are, or whether they're on the Internet to make a career. And Lord knows I don't discourage somebody from getting credit for honest work saving the world. Whatever they're doing, the fact of the matter is, all the media can do is one worn-out, tried trick after another to try to brace Boy George up so that he can stay in power, so that, God knows, what do you think's the next move? Israel starting a war in the Middle East?
Yeah.
For some reason,
the dancing, I think the dancing Israelis may surface, and that'll cause a real problem.
I'll tell you the immediate linkage, 1 minute worth of analysis for you and yours right now, Lenny. The word has come out, Israel considers attack of Iranian nuclear program. Israel to attack Iran nuke. Israel, Iran nuke. Do you know, as an old public relations and public affairs person, I would submit that when you keep saying in the media often enough, Israel to attack Iran nukes, you're real close to having people understand that Israel is to nuke Iran.
Yep.
You start throwing Iran and nuke back to back about 100 times, and pretty soon people's minds get dyslexic. They don't understand who had the nukes and who was supposed to use them.
Yeah, all you have to do, the collective consciousness, Captain May, is like wax. Heat it up, and you can turn it to mold it into mold it into whatever pattern you choose, and you recreate their reality and brainwash them, and that's how they do it. And great counter propaganda specialists have a nose that they can just smell it, even with their eyes closed.
Well, they say that to be intelligent is to be ever paranoid, but right now my particular paranoia runs in this direction. The United States cabal, Boy George and company, failed to pull off the Texas City, Texas, British Petroleum false flag attack on 728-2005, just like we have it recorded. And right now are basically out of gas and drifting. So given that Israel is certainly part of this axis of good, this oceanic alliance that we've come up with the Anglo powers and Israel right in the middle of it, I think Israel may well have control of this scenario to the point that if the United States can't start World War III the way everyone wanted it started, the nice way, the neat way, I'm not sure that Israel isn't willing to do this freelance, because you remember Cheney about, 6 months ago saying that, well, you know, Israel might go in there and hit Iran themselves, and we wouldn't have a whole lot of complaint about that. Because this is clearly, even in the language of the Nosy Party, which remember, in Ghost Troop lingo, is the Zionist Party, this has become openly stated as a matter of an existential dilemma for Israel. Iran's nuclear program, such as it is called a, quote, existential, unquote, dilemma. An existential, in this sense, is interpreted not as a philosophical and abstruse concept, but as the idea of who's going to exist and not exist. It's a matter of national survival. That's the way they put it out. That's the way they're putting it out. And that's the way the U.S. Nosy Party media puts it out to the United States. So certainly the Israeli side of things bears close watching, And we really need to see whether or not they aren't just going to become the foremost agitator in that whole Middle Eastern scenario. Now that we've lost our initiative, it doesn't mean we're out. We're caught in a quicksand war, and Israel's move might be to pull us in deeper. After all, we had another assassination in Syria today, didn't we, or was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Lebanon. Another Syrian critic has been assassinated in Lebanon. I forget the name even. I think it was today. And, of course, you and I know that right now President Hafez of Syria is the last thing on earth he wants to do in the current situation is start another fight by assassinating his enemies. I don't claim that the man is above it. I don't know the man, but I presuppose the worst about all leaders just looking at ours. So I'm not saying he wouldn't like to pop his critics. I'm just saying you don't do it when the U.S. and Israel are trying to rig up a world jihad against you. So right now it looks very much like Israel is engaged in provocative actions to try to create a climate whereby they have free fire zones against either Syria or Iran. So we're not nearly out of what we're willing
to. And there's no thought of or understanding put to the action. It's merely the reaction from a position of hatred.
Yeah, but...
It's hatred. They have such hatred.
Well, there's a lot of it going around on all sides. What I tell all people I work with in Ghost Troop is that I have no delusions about whether or not the Druze, the Arabs, the Persians, my God, you know, for all I know, the Hittites and the Sumerians. There's no one over there, past, present, or future, that I really don't think is hot-headed and intense and passionate. The only thing that's different about my analysis from that of most people who try to do polite talk, which means talk without saying anything intelligent, is that among people like the Druze, the Persians, the Arabs, and if you want the Hittites and the Sumerians, I list the Jews. They're one of the groups in that part of the world, and I try to look objectively at all groups. Lenny, the most important ghost troop I have is Ambassador Chase Untermyer of Qatar. He was my best friend and my best man at my wedding. He was my ghost troop chaplain. Ambassador Untermyer of Qatar, the day after 9-11, this is when I was writing for NBC, he called me or I called him and we talked. And now this is a very intelligent, worldly man. He was the Assistant Secretary of the Navy for Reagan Bush. He knows the inside of Washington and the inside of world capitals all over. The first question he had for me was, in light of 9-11, what do you think ought to be done? And the answer I had for him immediately was, I thought we ought to get to a neutral corner on Israel. That was the focal dilemma from the moment of 9-1-1.
Yeah.
The only thing is, my answer to the question was absolutely the answer that the American media did not want the public to come to. 9-1-1 was supposed to highlight the great hatred existing in the Middle East. It was just supposed to do it in such a way that instead of getting objective about getting out of an area where everyone hated everyone, we were supposed to pick sides with Israel. That was 9-1-1. 9-1-1 was the fusion event that made a single whole of U.S., Israel, Middle Eastern policy. There is no distinction between the two, which is why we had the bleeding over of intelligence, Mossad moles like Judith Miller, working with Mossad moles like Feist, Perlman, Wolfowitz, Libby.
Right.
All these people, there was no distinction made. Remember the Libby love note to Judy?
Yeah.
Like
we've got
the
it on our site. Yeah.
The roots are intertwined. It's great, you know. You couldn't make that better. I always thought that after the Soviet Union fell that we'd never get another top-rate intelligence story going. But boy, this one's been wonderful. It's just that my government happens to be playing the Russians, the evil empire role.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk? Well, Lou, sometimes I think we get into more trouble than we solve when we talk, but enlightenment is the beginning of all great movements to rectify tyranny. And it starts on the cloak for me. The info war is running 100 miles an hour.
Captain May, we at Cloak and Dagger salute you and all the great work you're doing down there.
Well, I and the holy horde of Ghost Troop, as we affectionately call ourselves, will continue to stay on special watch. Originally, we did it for our comrades in the war and for the boys of Baghdad, but since then, we've We've realized that in doing the right thing for a small group of people whom we knew were being abused at first, we've wound up being one of those groups of people that are in the right place for a very large group of people, that group being not only our country, but all of humanity. This is a mission of conscience for all of Ghost Troop, and we're in it to try to make a better world, and at all costs to stop the horrible world that will come if this war cabal is not derailed by brave people. Lenny, it's always great to be on with you in the cloak, and wishing happy trails to all your listeners. This is Captain May of Ghost Troop, signing out.
Read it yourself instead of asking the government why, because that will cause the propaganda to die. Once again, we'll be back with you real soon. Once again, as things develop, Captain May, it's just a real honor for us here to have you on with your wisdom and your treasury of knowledge. Thanks a lot. And good night, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Lenny.
You missed a very dull TV show about Auschwitz. More gruesome film clips, and more puzzled intellectuals declaring their mystification over the systematic murder of millions. The reason why they can never answer the question, how could it possibly happen, is that it's the wrong question. Given what people are, the question is, why doesn't it happen more often? Of course it does, in subtler form. It's been ages since I sat in front of the TV, just changing channels to find something. You see, the whole culture, Nazis, deodorant salesmen, wrestlers, beauty contest, the talk show. Can you imagine the level of a mind that watches wrestling? But the worst are the fundamentalist preachers, third-rate con men telling the poor suckers that watch them that they speak for Jesus and to please send in money. Money, money, money. If Jesus came back and saw what's going on in his name, he'd never stop throwing up.